today on Book Club, I am thrilled to welcome one of the UK's most loved storytellers, Adele Parks, MBE, I'll have you know. Over the past 25 years, she's become the author of 25 best-selling novels, with more than 5 million copies sold in English, translated into over 30 languages. Her books explore family, fidelity, love, parenting, and always with honesty, twists, and heart. Now, her new novel, Our Beautiful Mess, questions just how far a parent will go to protect their children. There's secrets, there's past mistakes, and mounting danger that collide in a house full of daughters, old ghosts, and explosive revelations. Adele, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely to be here.
It is so nice to have you here. I am in awe of the impressive list of novels that you've come out with. I mean, how exhausting and amazing.
Yeah, isn't it strange? Because, or don't we in life celebrate numbers like 10, 25, you know?
Milestones.
Milestones, and they're the big numbers. So obviously this year there's been a lot of talk, oh, you've done 25 books in 25 years. First of all, it makes me think, gosh, 25 years of doing anything. But yeah, I love it. So it doesn't feel exhausting for me. I mean, obviously, some days you'd be at my house and beg to differ. Because some days it does feel exhausting. But on the whole, I'm doing a job I love. Mm. So every day feels quite joyful. I remember my father years ago telling me, do a job that you enjoy and you'll never do a day's work, which isn't quite true, but it's pretty close.
Pretty close. And it is nice to have that joy in your life.
This Absolutely.
Now, you started back in 2000. Your first book was Playing Away. Mm-hmm. How has your approach changed as different iterations of you have come about? You know, as you've had children and changed.
It was really fun, Playing Away. It was a really fun, dare I say, quite filthy book. obviously, I was a lot younger. But also, actually, in my real life, I was going through a very difficult time, quite a hard time. There'd been losses in my family and in my and my colleagues and my friends. And in a very short time, I lost a fairly large number of people, all unrelated, but it was devastating. And very difficult things, obviously, old age and cancers. And I say obviously, I mean, I think a lot of people experienced that. But I also experienced suicide and murder.
Oh my God.
Which is horrific when you're in your mid 20s.
Yes.
Yeah, mid 20s. So I wrote a really playful, silly book. I mean, it wasn't silly in the terms of ridiculous, but in the terms of I wanted her to have fun. I wanted this character to have a brilliant wardrobe, fabulous friends, fantastic relationship, should we say, because it's only in the afternoon. But you know what I mean about relationships. And I wanted all of that for her because it was an escape for me. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, over the 25 years, my life has got much more stable and a lot more fun. And I've got older, so I've got wiser and more resilient. And now, if anything, my books are darker. And I suspect it's because I can now allow myself to go to dark places without getting frightened. So this book, which is a family drama, does take the kids, the three young girls, two of them are really put through the mill. Not too many spoilers, don't want to tell you anything. But there's an unwanted pregnancy, there's a drugs gang, you know, there's a lot of trouble. And I don't think I would have had the life experience to talk about, you know, what it was like to be a mother. I could only, for at that point, talk about what it was like to be a daughter. But I wouldn't have had the life experience to be what it was like to be a mother, let alone a mother to all adult children. And I wouldn't have had the confidence to write dilemmas that I felt I could really dip dark and deep for emotions and then pull back again. So yes, you'd be pleased to know in 25 years, mm-hmm, I have honed my craft.
You certainly have. Now let's talk about Our Beautiful Mess. Mm. I think the title is really, really apt. And if I can just share the way that I read it, because I read the book, but I also dipped into the audiobook when that was available.
Perfect.
And actually, that changed some of my perceptions of what I was listening to. It kind of crafted how they looked to me. I was seeing John Bishop as John Harding. But let's go back, because let's do a bit more 101 about what the book is about, because I did really enjoy it. And I think one of the things that you really voiced very, very well was the perspectives from the mother, the daughter, and the boyfriend, mm-hmm, but also You know how when you have a teenage daughter or even a daughter in their 20s, you say something, they take it one way. You say, oh, you're looking really nice. And they're like, so you thought I looked awful yesterday. Is that what you're saying? And I thought it was ingenious and really perceptive the way that you explained their voices and the reaction to each conversation and scene that you were going through.
Yes, I had real joy and a real giggle doing everybody's viewpoint. I love doing multiple viewpoints. I think the thing is, we're born with one life, aren't we? And we tend to have one viewpoint. And as we become adults, we learn how to have other viewpoints, or how to listen at least to other people's viewpoints, and we do if we're developed. So that's the hope. And reading actually really massively increases that empathy, because you walk in other people's shoes. And that is part of the craft of being a writer, being able to, you know, write in other characters and many of the characters, and juggling it. So this book starts at the end, which is really extraordinary. I think I've fiddled with structure on purpose. So you open it up and it says the end, and actually you see the mum, Connie, frantically tending a gunshot wound, and we don't know if it's her gunshot wound or somebody she loves, but we know it's devastating and it is somebody's end, or potentially their end. Then we flip the page and it says 11 days earlier, and there's Connie up a ladder dressing her Christmas tree, and the only thing she's really worrying about is her, you know, Christmas cheese and charcuterie board. Is that platter going to look like the one on Instagram? And that's all she cares about. But we as a reader know she has this sort of 11-day countdown, which is incredibly tense. So we have that sort of omniscient presence anyway, the reader, that Connie doesn't have. But Connie's looking forward to her children coming home from uni, the eldest two are at uni, the other one's already still at home. And the minute her eldest, she's really looking forward to the eldest coming home. The eldest is the peacemaker in the family. And yet when Fran walks up the path, it becomes very quickly it becomes apparent that she's pregnant and she's only 20, and it isn't part of Connie's plan. But before we get too embedded in Connie's point of view, I do flip it and see what Fran's thinking. And Fran actually has some problems and issues and secrets of her own. Then we flip it again to Zach, which actually Connie has some problems with his boyfriend, some really quite serious
deep problems,
ones.
Yeah.
Yes, deep ones, because they're all connected to her own set of secrets, because she's not a saint. Who is? And the way I like to construct a novel, I like them to be entertaining. I want twists and turns. And the very best way to make a twisty-turny novel is if you allow your reader to know perhaps more than the characters, which is having lots of viewpoints allows that trick, but perhaps not everything, so that the reader is still invested and sort of wondering, well, what is going to happen and who is the person with the gunshot wound? And I really did enjoy writing this book, but also because, you know, Connie is the character in book one. So that flighty, fun book that I wrote 25 years ago, that was Connie when she was young and making her mistakes. And here she is, a sort of much more, you know, she's a midlife woman. She ought to have she certainly has much more life experience. She has a certain amount more wisdom, let's see. And here she is trying to stop her children making any mistakes because she knows she did.
She's not as perfect as
yes,
we see her to be.
And that's what she's trying to do, but it's an impossible task, isn't it? None of us can stop our children making mistakes.
Completely. Your pacing is very good.
Thank you.
It really is, because you start off and she's at the top of the Christmas tree and, you know, everything's lovely and they're listening to the... I actually looked up this playlist that you mentioned, Hotel Costas.
Yes.
Like, you're very specific with your descriptions of clothes and ambiance and things that you're eating. And I like that because I really feel like I'm drilling down to a very specific level on what this feels like and what it smells like and what the room is like and what their lives are like. So we start off at the Christmas tree and, you know, obviously they get a bit of a devastating shock when Fran comes home and she's pregnant. And we're just sort of laying the land out. And then, boom, you change things in perhaps three words. I feel like I'm going a straight road. And then, woo, I've got to turn right.
Amazing. That's exactly what I want. Because all that detail and gentleness is inviting you in as a reader. It is building that world around you. I spend a lot of time thinking about my characters. I interview them, actually. You'd appreciate it because you're an interviewer. And so I interview them and I have a sort of host of questions, almost 200 questions. I don't ask them all 200, but I will dip in and out of questions. And so, you know, I know, for example, how Connie spent her 8th birthday. That has never appeared in a book.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, it's really fun. And although that's never appeared in a book, and why would it? It just makes me feel really comfortable and solid about her. And so I do the same with Fran and Zach, my three main characters. And it gives things away, you know. Were they comfortable at their birthday parties, or were they, were they centre of attention, or were they disappointed? And that's just one question. I ask them questions about, you know, what are your secrets? Who's your best friend? Who would you ring if you'd scratched your car? Who would you ring if you'd knocked someone over?
It makes them so three-dimensional.
It really makes them quite deep. And I don't... As I say, I don't use that because it really would bore people if you sort of laid on that onto the...
But that's your job, isn't it?
But it's
my
job.
You're the author.
That's
it. You do all the work and then we get to read the finished article. Yeah.
And you get to cherry pick the bits of that you will get introduced to these characters. But yes, the idea of the pacing, I do sort of quite like... I just want to reflect real life. None of us know, do we, when things are going to change suddenly. But unfortunately, in life, things can... Things can be sort of, and I think I learned this very young, which I, going back to that thing about saying the experiences I had in my mid-20s, which I don't think, thank goodness, are representative of most people's 20s. I think most people in their 20s are perhaps worrying about their careers and their relationships, and that's enough, and maybe where they live, and that's plenty. But I had all of that. And all of the deaths too. So I knew and have always known that life can change very suddenly. And so I like investigating that. I suppose it's a little way that we prepare, being aware that these things can change. But there's a lot of twists and turns in this, and I've really prided myself on them, and I know I've given lots of people entertainment already on it, so I'm proud.
You absolutely have. I felt like I was... And I'm not a gamer or anything, but I felt like I was on a Super Mario Kart and I was going around the racetrack and doing pretty well, avoiding things. And then all of a sudden, some like huge asteroid would hit me and I'd be flipped all over and I'd have to recalibrate and everything. And as you go through...
I love that. I've got that image in my head now. I love it.
Well, yeah, and it just came to me as I was like 2/3 of the way through, and then all of a sudden we're galloping. It's going so fast that I could feel my heart rate go up.
Yes, and that is because actually the device at the beginning where you know as a reader you only have 11 days, and it happens to be set over Christmas, because I don't think Christmas is stressful enough. Do you, listeners? No. And so there is that sort of intensity of Christmas. First of all your family are together. So if you have secrets, it's much harder to hide them. And also the expectation to have a really good time is so intense that if something small goes wrong, it is already amplified. But in this case, in this family, huge things go wrong, several of them. And so they're vastly amplified. Besides that, we as readers know somebody somewhere, somebody who you may be loving very dearly by now, is on their countdown.
You start to get to know them and you feel invested in them. And, you know, there are some unlikable traits, but it's very few times I've ever felt like sorry for a drug dealer or sorry for a drug pusher. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I mean, that is caveated because obviously none of us do feel sorry for drug pushers.
But we realised that there was a reason he was pushed down
in
that path.
In this particular case, there is a character that is trapped into that world, and that's devastating. And it's a very, you know, vulnerable young person, and I think... As you know, we're not vulnerable as young people. Should we go with that, Michelle? I think that's fine. So I think we can have a level of sympathy because he just didn't know how to dig his way out of that.
No. Let's turn to the audiobook then, because I think this adds another layer of characterization and visualization to your book. It's done really well. And I'm sorry, I've completely forgotten who the narrators are, which is awful because I narrate audiobooks too, so I'd be really upset if somebody forgot my name. But Have you listened to the audiobook?
I have. I always
the way that you heard those characters.
Yes, I mean Kristen Alterton, who I think I've pronounced. I think that's the surname. We might need to double check. Yeah. I don't know why I'm blanking on it too, because I can see the lady in my head, and she's marvelous. And she has done 3 or 4 of my books. And actually, I think people have found my books because they follow her because she's so marvelous. But in this particular recording, we also have a male actor so that we can do the male voices, which I think really helps clarify the sort of, I mean, I'm sure that she could have read the male voices too and acted those parts and we still would have understood the story, but they really are men coming from men's points of view, men's histories, and I wanted that to have, you know, the two different voices. And yes, I went in to listen to some of the recording happening, and also I recorded a little sort of bonus material on the end of the audiobook. But I do love audio, and a lot of people do it your way. They read, and then they can't. They, you know, maybe in the car or something, and they can't be reading, so they then listen to the mm-hmm. audio too, which I think is marvelous. I love audiobooks, so I'm a big fan.
Yeah, no, it's. I would definitely recommend it. And these days, you can get it on Spotify, and it just comes with
you
package,
can.
Which is amazing.
That's absolutely true. It is. You get. I think it's something like 14 hours a month for free, which is about as you know, one audiobook a month.
Hi, it's Anthea Turner here, and delighted to be joining Michelle on Brooklands Radio, bringing you the stories behind the stories on Michelle's Book Club.
And I am joined today by the fabulous Adele Parks, who always breezes in with a big smile. I mean, are you always as happy?
I am usually very happy. Yeah, I do choose happy. You know, I know it sounds like it could be sewn onto a cushion, but I do think, I feel I'm very lucky. I'm very, you know, I'm healthy. I've got a great family, and I think I won't moan while it's going well, because that gives me, I suppose that gives me a bit of slack if anything goes wrong and I can grumble. But no, I do try and wander around with a beam and do my best to brighten things.
To be a rainbow.
Well, yeah, I try.
A rainbow. Well, you mentioned your family there. Let's go there, because I know as proud of your family are of you, you are so proud of your husband right now, aren't you?
I am indeed. He, yes. Well, I'm always proud of both my husband and my son. But yes, my husband, I think what you're particularly referring to is we often talk about women's midlife changes in their careers. And I think that's becoming quite a recognised thing. And usually, or not, you know, quite often, that midlife change comes from the fact that they have been the main carer of the children, and then the children have flown the nest. And so the women are looking around going, well, I have loads of energy and I have loads of intelligence and enthusiasm and loads of transferable skills. What can I do next? Well, in our family, my husband had hugely supported my career. He did work. He was a designer of websites, largely for production companies for TV and film and for authors. And before that, he had worked as a marketing director at Universal, an international marketing director at Universal. So he had his jobs, but he largely supported mine, and mine was sort of the big deal. And as our son got older, I did think, gosh, he's going to be the one with the biggest empty nest syndrome.
Refinding purpose.
Yes.
And having that midlife crisis, if you like.
And I'm not sure if it's true, by the way, because I think I still found it a real struggle in my own little way. But my relationship with my son was very much, it's a very verbal, we chat every time. So you can still do that even when they fly the nest, you pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. But his was very much anchored around drop off at school, take to rugby, pick up from parties, that sort of thing. So he decided to, people keep saying go back to university. In fact, it was the first time he had ever gone to university, because he left school at 16. Didn't come from the kind of childhood where there was a lot of academic opportunities at all. Mm-hmm. A very poor childhood in terms of financial opportunities. So he went to university, and he actually went to the National Film and Television Uni.
It's
such a cool story. It's absolutely ridiculous. If I wrote it, people would say, well, that wouldn't happen. But he went, and he graduated, and he did super well. And part of the course was how to make your very first film. And he used The Image of You, which is one of my novels, as his test case, because we were trying to get it off the ground. We were trying to get a film made. And long story short, That film is now being made, being launched. Paramount bought it, and that happened a couple of years ago. And since then, he's worked on two films with Steven Soderbergh.
It's so mad.
It's so mad. Oscar winner Steven Soderbergh. So Black Bag, which has already been in cinemas and is now available at home, and I'm sure everybody's seen it because it's done terrifically well.
How about the casting?
Cate Blanchett, Michael Fassbender, Pierce Brosnan. Yes, pretty cool. So, you know, unbelievable that he was involved in that. And then he was the producer on another film with Stephen called The Christophers, with Sir Ian McKellen and Michaela Cole as the leads. And we have just come back from Toronto, where it had its global premiere at TIFF. So it's extraordinary. What's happened in his last 3 years is extraordinary.
This is all in 3 years.
Mm.
So do you mind me asking, sort of roughly, is he what, in 40s or 50s?
He's in his 50s, yeah.
That is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, he's in his 50s. And he'd done all sorts of things, you know. So he had all the film and TV contacts because he was doing the websites, and he'd built our own house, which... Apparently, the day he started this course at uni, they said, oh, the only person with any experience in making a film are people who've built their own house. Sort of tongue-in-cheek joke. And he put his hand up and said, well, I've done that. And the idea is, of course, there's a lot of scheduling and budgeting.
Oh, I see, yes.
And bringing teams together. And he'd done all of that. And he is, you know, you've met him, Michelle. He is quite an exceptional human being.
He's so fascinating to talk to.
Thank you.
I mean, I was at your thing, but I ended up talking to him for ages.
Because he's adorable.
He's got to come on Brooklyn's Radio. Because,
he'd love to. I'm sure he'd love to. But the fun thing about Jim is... I always say people quite like me when they meet me, and then they meet him and they like him even more. And I always sort of joke and go, even my mum, she goes, I don't pet, but I sort of think she does. And he is somebody who is real proof that you make your own opportunities, and you, if you work hard enough, because he grew up in Dorset, and as I say, with a very poor background, with a single parent, a father who brought him up. Who had the father, his dad, my father-in-law, he's passed now, but my father-in-law was somebody who was evacuated age 8 and basically left school age 8 to go and work on a farm. So this wasn't a chap who valued, you know, that
education.
Kind of education,
yeah.
But was very keen to give Jim a broader life. So used to bring him up to London, which was a great expense for them, but bring him up to London to take him to the galleries and museums to try and open his mind that way. So, yeah, they're very much a self-starter, and I'm super proud of him.
I can tell.
Yeah, if anybody, I think you also picked up on this story because you follow me on my Instagram, and there's just such a gushing, ridiculous post. The funny thing was, I put that post up, and it was all gushing and lovely about him, and, you know, him there on the red carpet with Steven Soderbergh and Michaela Cole, and it was all very exciting. And I said to him, have you seen the post? And he read it and went, yeah, you've got two typos in it. Which was so funny.
But
because,
what about the sentiment?
Yeah, and I was like, what about this? That's exactly what I asked. And he went, yeah, but I know you like things right. So fix the typos. So I quickly fixed the typos. And then he went, that's adorable. But for him, the first thing was to make me look better and more professional. He wasn't going to sort of suck it up and just make it about him, even though I wanted it to be about him. And I just think that's very Jim.
I love the dynamic between the two of you, because you've done book tours between you when he has interviewed you on stage or in bookstores and everything. It's just such a lovely, genuinely supportive relationship, at least from observation.
No, it really genuinely is, even if you were observing us in our house day in, day out. The peek behind the curtain, as we call that particular sort of event, it is a huge giggle, because how it started is, for many years Jim didn't come on tour with me because, as I say, he was looking after Conrad. So if I had a tour, that was the joy of Jim's job and being self-employed. He could be at home with Conrad. So I did them on my own, and travel lodges at the end of the country and quiet evenings eating a cold pizza on your own or something. It's all glam, being a writer. And then when Conrad flew the nest, Jim sort of said, oh, I could drive you. And at least in the drive, you can be on your phone and you can be answering your emails, or you can be listening to an audiobook, or be a bit more relaxing than doing the driving and the event. And then we'd get to the event, and sometimes it would be, you know, me standing up on my own. Sometimes I'd be interviewed. But then we just worked out it'd be more fun, him asking me questions, because he would, on the way home, he'd say, you know what they didn't ask you, which I wanted to know. And it just sort of evolved, and then we put it to various book festivals and such, and people love it. People do love it. And Jim always jokes, you know, we do this because it's cheaper than therapy, because we have to talk in public about our relationship.
You need a podcast.
Well, I keep saying that to him, but I don't think he has sort of time to scratch his eyebrow right now. So I don't think we're going to get a podcast anytime soon. But yes, it's great fun when we do go away together. Our first event, which was here in Surrey, at a local bookshop this year for my launch, we did the old school peek before the curtain, behind the curtain.
Was that at the Cobham bookstore?
Yes, it was. Yeah. I didn't know if you were allowed to mention places.
Of course.
So I was moving around it. Yeah, no, fantastic bookstore. And it's been going for a long, long time, many, many years, and wonderful people work there. And I actually got invited because an old school gate mum, you know those relationships, a lovely friend from the school gate works there, and she invited me, so we had a great time.
That's wonderful. I'll tell you what will give you bad dreams, Adele Parks.
Oh dear, what have I said in that during the song?
No, your books, twisty, turny, often scary, just as you think you're going to be able to lay down and maybe get a good night's rest, you've got to read another chapter. I blame you. I'm
Sorry.
Really exhausted at the moment, but it was worth it.
But I do like to think, I think whilst I do, I hope, scare people and keep them on the end of the seats, I do need to give caveats. There's not like a huge body count or anything gory at all.
But it's the suspense. It's the anticipation.
That's it. There we are. Let's
it's
go
horrible.
With that.
Awful.
Sorry.
But it is good. So Our Beautiful Mess. Now, we were just talking about your lovely husband, Jim, who works in film. And I know that you've got Image of You in production.
Actually, That's done. Image of You is the one that's already out and up, and you can go and see it. You can watch it tonight if you want.
Oh, well, I might just do that.
Yeah.
But I would say Our Beautiful Mess definitely lends itself to the movies.
Oh, that's interesting.
Would you get Jim involved if that got optioned?
Yes, is my quick answer. I mean, Jim and another one of our friends, the two people that I would most like to produce my work. Because the other friend, AJ, he grew up on the same street as I did. We didn't grow up at the same time on that street, but we definitely have roots together. And I think that was sort of Jim's first sort of belief that you could go into film, because there was somebody else with a similar sort of background that you could go in, who had gone into film. And I think the two of them, I know the two of them have got aspirations for some of my books, and the one we're looking at to develop at the moment is First Wife Shadow.
Oh yes.
Yes, so that is in a level of development, and we're super excited about it, and we have had conversations with the great and the good, and we're trying to attach people. The way it's such a jigsaw, it's quite hard to get a book published, believe me, but get a film made is about 50 times harder. But I believe it will happen. I do actually believe it will happen at some point. But we need the script finished. We need talent attached. And then we do have somebody who has sort of already said, oh, who's going to be in it? So, yeah, we'll see.
Exciting.
It is exciting.
How exciting. Well, you don't just write books. You support books, don't you? You are wonderful at supporting books through festivals. I laugh a lot. Louise Minchin has been on my podcast.
Aww.
And you two, you crazies, you have got this mad friendship now. You met on a cruise ship, didn't you?
We did. We knew of each other before that, because we both write columns for a magazine called Platinum. So we were sort of colleagues, but the way the world is, and certainly the way writing is, we hadn't physically been in the same room, but we were on a cruise ship, which was in fact also a book event. It was a Cunard cruise ship where they have sort of 20 authors doing the crossing between Southampton and New York, and every day the 3, 4, 5 book events and chats like these, and we hit it off 100%, and we've seen a lot of each other since, and we're very, very alike in many, many ways. And we've recently just been on a girls tour, the two of us. She was interviewing me, and we were up and down the country, all the way from sort of here and Wales and up to the Wirral. And she did all the driving and we both did a lot of talking and it was absolutely joyful.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
She's a breath of fresh air, isn't she?
She is.
She really is. What's next for you?
Oh, next. So, yes, well, I have already written book 26 that is being handed in. We need to think of a title. And so really, between now and Christmas, I start playing with ideas for book 27. So I will be doing...
And is that your process? You start right after Christmas with a new
yes.
book?
Yes.
So it's like,
yes.
Christmas is done, get my head in the game.
Yeah. So autumn is very much... There are loads of book festivals. You know, there's one here in Surrey, which is Guildford Book Festival. I think actually there will be several in Surrey.
Because Henley's coming up.
Henley, I'm at Henley, yep. So there's plenty of book festivals and I've got lots of events where I'm off promoting. So while I'm promoting and generally on the car on my own, I tend to think about plots and I have two or three ideas and I'll start investigating those plots. Are they long enough to make a novel or are they really just a short story, something I'm having a bit of fun with? Mm-hmm. And then I'll think of the characters and I'll sort of start plotting and planning so that I am itching to write it. And Christmas is actually a little bit annoying for me.
Gets in the way.
Because it gets in the way because I want to write. And that's the vibe I have to have because then on January the 3rd or 4th, whichever the first Monday, hit the ground running.
Good for
exactly
you.
That. And then that will sort of be written between the January and the July to, you know, that sort of time. So that's sort of me and my process and that's ticking along. But there are lots of other things. The work I do with the National Literacy Trust, we're trying to get libraries in every primary. We're looking at that. That keeps me busy, fundraising for that. I've got a couple of other fundraiser events coming up, one for breast cancer and one in Wales for cot death, actually, which is very sad. All these charities are very sad, but what we can do is make them a bit more hopeful by doing fundraising. So there's plenty on my plate. I'm not bored, Michelle. I'm not bored.
No, you're not bored.
No.
You bring a lot of energy to the table, I think.
Well, I do. Why wouldn't we? I think, I'm very much a believer of you get one life and you can squeeze as much out of it as you
yes.
possibly can in the most productive, positive way for everybody else. I do believe that. But yes, my oxygen mask goes on by me being involved and being out there. That's the thing that gives me oxygen.
Amazing. All right, how about we finish with a quick fire round?
Okay, that sounds fun.
I haven't even prepped you for this.
No.
All right, it's easy. First thing that comes into your head.
Mm.
Tea or wine when writing?
Tea.
Excellent. Morning lark or midnight owl at the laptop?
Morning lark.
Red carpet or cozy night in?
Red carpet.
I can see. You love a bit of red. You like a good red suit too.
I do love a red suit. I do love a cozy night in, especially in this weather, but having had that red carpet moment 2 weeks ago for my husband, it was one of the happiest days of my life. I loved it.
Oh, love it.
Also, it was best because I was corporate wife. I didn't actually have to do anything.
Yes.
I could just sit back and watch him run around worried and I just had the perks. It was lovely. Anyway.
Oh, lovely. All right. Character from your novels that you'd most like to have dinner with?
Lucy. And Lucy's turned up in Connie's, all of Connie's books. So Playing Away, Young Wife's Tales, Lies, 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 and this one, Our Beautiful Mess. And she is astoundingly cool and says all the things I wish I could say.
I want to be Lucy.
Everybody wants to be Lucy because she's so cool. But yeah.
No filter either.
No really filter.
Good. What's always on your desk when you're writing?
An empty Diet Coke can.
Oh.
I drink a lot of Diet Coke, more than is healthy, I am aware. But that is my sort of, that is my vice.
All right. One word your family would use to describe you when you're mid-deadline.
Ooh. Focused?
Uh-huh.
I think they'd say focused because they're polite. They'd mean oblivious. So I'm oblivious to them when I'm mid-deadline, I think.
Perfect. All right. And finally, what's on your bedside table?
Oh, piles of books. Piles of books and my journal.
What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Heidi Perks. It's not out yet. She's given it to me, hoping that I'll review it or give a little blurb. And I've just started that last night.
Fantastic. Adele, you are gorgeous and lovely. Wonderful to have in the studio.
Oh,
I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
I can stay all day.
You could. I bet you could.
I could. This is lovely.
And actually, Adele might pop in on Monday on our back to school show because she's just offered a little prize.
I did. Yes. I was thinking I should have brought one anyway, but I forgot. But I'll bring a signed book And then maybe that could be one of your competition
for the
winners.
Giveaway, yes.
Yeah, for the giveaway.
Wonderful. All right. Where can they find Our Beautiful Mess? It's everywhere, isn't it?
It's everywhere. If I'm really allowed to plug it, it's heavily discounted right now at WH Smith Online and at Amazon Online.
All right.
Oh, and in all the supermarkets. In all the supermarkets with good deals. To be honest with you, you can get it anywhere and it's really good, because obviously I want you to buy it from independents and your retailers. So
yes.
Anywhere.
Go buy it wherever it is.
Yeah.
Adele Parks, MBE, thank you for joining us on Brooklyn's Radio.
Thank you for inviting me and having me here.
At Michelle's Book Club, stories unfold. From thrillers to romance, adventures untold. In our author chats,